Green Future Growers and Progressive Radio Network listeners. This is Jackie Marie Beyer, your host for the Organic Gardener Podcast. And I just want to say thanks so much for listening. I hope you subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, podcast app. And if you haven't been to our website, I hope you'll check out the organicgardenerpodcast.com. If you go there, you can download our 7 awesome ways to save time in the garden. You can also find a link to free garden course where you can learn how to grow a garden if you're a new gardener, or how to expand into market farming if you want to learn how to expand your mini farm, etc. And just there's a little bit of something there for everyone. And also, you know, check out the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper and the 2018 Garden Goals Challenge. You can listen to all in one episode. So thanks again for listening, and let's get growing.
The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/OGP. Anyway, what's your weather like today? It's really snowy and icy here.
Well, we are very thin clouds. Like, there's enough sun coming through to cast shadows, but it's definitely overcast. But we're in the low 30s right now. It's supposed to get up to the 40s. So that's what we had yesterday, too. So, yay us.
Cool. Yeah, we have snow. I got to get on the road as soon as we're done and get, because the pass is, I think, going to be kind of dangerous today.
I like to get there.
And it's going to start snowing around 2, and it's a 3-hour drive, so I kind of want to, I'll get there right about when the snow's starting, so it'll be perfect. Yeah. This is perfect. I'm so excited. A listener, a past guest that dropped tons of valuable seeds, and tomorrow's my anniversary, you know, so hopefully, like, I think this will go good, and I'm just going to put it up raw. Because what could be a better episode for my anniversary than a chat with you and update and all of your, like, super exciting stuff that's going on.
Yeah, and so, it's funny because this is my 3-year anniversary of listening to podcasts, believe it or not.
It is? Oh, cool.
Yeah, I never listened to podcasts. A friend of mine said, you got to start listening to podcasts. At the time, I was an evening custodian. It's like, I'll definitely have time to listen to them. And I searched out organic gardening the first time I went into iTunes to find, you know, podcasts. My buddy said, everything's in there. So, and yours was the one I found and the first one I ever downloaded and listened to.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. It's funny, yeah, though. So, like, I can remember the very first podcast I listened to. It was Michael Hyatt. And I remember where I was driving and what I was doing. And, like, I was taking this leadership class and we had to listen to a podcast for this leadership class, and they recommended Michael Hyatt. And so and that was the very first one. And it's been, like, ever since, like, now I can't even imagine not listening to them. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that's awesome. And I was your first podcast that you ever listened to. That's so cool. So, yep. All right. Well, since we are recording, we might as well introduce you and tell everybody else everything that you've going on, because now you're working with Green Future Growers and helping our planet even more than ever. So I'll just start, I guess, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure.
Okay. So welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am so excited. It is Sunday, January 28th, 2018. Tomorrow is 3 years since I launched the very first 3 episodes of the Organic Gardener Podcast. And today, my guest started out as a listener. came on, was an amazing guest, and now he's telling me that the Organic Gardener podcast was the first podcast he ever listened to. So get your earbuds, get comfortable, because you are going to hear an amazing episode today. And welcome to the show, Joe the Mason from Maine on the other side of the country.
Hey, Jackie. Good morning. How are you? Hey, listeners.
Well, we're glad to have you here today, Joe. So do you just want to tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for having me back on. Feel like an honor to be on for a second time. I live in Orono, Maine, eastern side of Maine. I am a custodian at our elementary school, Asa Adams Elementary School, and I'm an organic-minded grower in the backyard. And at the school this year, I was selected to be the greenhouse coordinator because we have a small greenhouse right off our main entryway coming into the school. So that is a neat venture so far.
I love this so much. And especially, like, I'm just trying to get back into the greenhouse at our school. So I'm so curious to know how that's working and how things are going there. And you know that custodians have a huge place in my heart, because as an elementary school teacher, they have to go into my messy room at the end of every day, no matter how hard I try to get my kids and I to clean it. Definitely not one of my strengths, and definitely one of my biggest strengths is making messes. And like, we did paper mache this week, and I think my principal was about to be like, what the heck is going on in there? And like, and then I do the tutoring after school, and so the custodian comes into my room last, but then I ride the bus with the kids, and so he goes in there before, like, I try to get it clean. But like, when you have paper mache, we planted seeds and milk cartons this week, so there was dirt, there was like, oh my gosh, the poor guy. It was just, but to me, that's what learning is all about. So God bless all of you custodians out there. And just, and not only that, my custodians at my school help keep me safe, because I don't always work in I feel very safe there, but they just kind of keep an extra eye out for me. So they definitely, I love all of you. And you're a listener besides, like, how great is that? So do you want to...
One more minute.
Do you want to tell listeners about your very first gardening experience if they didn't listen to the original episode? Just to kind of, because I always begin the show asking about, like, you know, sure. Were you a kid? Were you an adult? You know how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. So it was back when I was a kid in the same house I'm living in now, actually. Out back, my grandfather had his garden, and I would go out and, you know, do all the quality control, you know, pick a cucumber, wipe the dirt off on my, you know, shorts and eat it. Gramp, these are great. We'll go over to the tomatoes, do the same thing, pull a carrot. And then years later, when I moved back to Maine in 2007, I started gardening on a small plot across from the house that I was in at that time. Now I'm back in the house I grew up in, and I dug the back up again. My folks had let it just go to lawn when they didn't want to take care of the garden anymore. And so for 15 or 20 years, it was just dad mowing it, but I hand dug it back up and now have a 20 foot by 50 foot garden spot out back.
That is huge. And I remember you showing me the pictures of you digging it up, and definitely got a CrossFit Gardener Award that year, because that is a lot of work, a 20 by 50 yeah. foot space. So, well,
some people pay to go to a gym.
Right? and I'm one of them. Isn't that funny? Or actually, fortunately, where I work, there's a free gym, but like, I definitely hit the gym before I hit the garden. I know Mike's the right. total. He's just like you. He's like, why would you do that when you can do so much work? But I don't know. For me, that's just how it works. Like, I just set a goal. I'm going to try to run a half a marathon again this year. Or I might even try to run the whole thing. I don't know. It depends. My official training date would not begin until April 1st, April Fool's Day of all days. So we'll see what kind of shape I'm in by then. But I'm definitely going to try to. I've been listening to this podcast called the, what is it? The meat-free athlete, the meat, no meat athlete. And so they've kind of been inspiring me to get my acting gear. Yesterday I was listening to like their top 10 hacks for runners or something, and just anyway, I'm totally off topic here, and I know we're here to talk about your amazing gardening experiences. So well, tell us what grew what. What are you planting in this giant 20 by 50 foot place? Like, I remember from last time you taught us about Brussels sprouts. Like, Mike had never grown Brussels sprouts. And then when he was growing them, I had to go back and listen to our episode and look at the show notes and figure out what he was supposed to do. So that was awesome. So what's growing this year?
Well, or last summer? Last summer was not a good year for my garden, Jackie. I don't know what happened, but the only thing that grew well for me were my tomatoes. None of my root vegetables grew, and my cukes and my zucchinis, like things that normally just take off on their own, just struggled, and I didn't get much out of it. I changed. I had someone till my garden, but the till was too low, I think, and didn't stir the soil up enough. I'm not doing that this year. I'm going back to hand tilling just to get a deeper, you know, and more earthworm friendly dirt turnover. I'm also going to get new seeds. One of my agriculture friends at the University of Maine here in Orono had suggested that maybe my seeds were too old, maybe. And another thing, here's a tip that I wasn't aware of. I was planting all my seeds a quarter inch deep, no matter what kind of seed it was. Well, for carrots and beets, which are very small seeds, a seed isn't supposed to be planted more than like a quarter of an inch in the dirt based on the size of the seed.
Right.
Because there's two things in a seed, what makes it grow and the food, you know, the growing part and the food to get there. If it doesn't have enough food to break the soil surface, it dies. So all my small seeds were too deep.
Oh.
And they just never had enough to kick through the surface to kick in photosynthesis. So when you hear it, it's like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. So I think that's what may have done that. So I'm going to use all these lessons and this year do all the same thing. Carrots, beets, peas, a pretty basic garden. I still grow Brussels sprouts because I love those. Definitely cucumbers and zucchini, because now I pickle everything.
You do?
And those, I've fallen in love with pickling. Yeah, it's great. Actually, for Christmas, friends of mine got me this book called Small Batch Preserving by Ellie Topp. And it's for small gardeners. You know, we don't get 300 cucumbers all at once, you know, and so this has small batch size pickling. I just actually pickled some asparagus with tarragon and shallots.
Yum.
Like a month ago. We just cracked them open yesterday, my friends, to try them. Fantastic. Yeah, it's a great book. And I've fallen in love with pickling. Everything. Carrots, fiddleheads. It's a main item that grows up here. Cucumbers, zucchini. Yeah, I pickled some pumpkin skin. I'm waiting to try that.
Pumpkin skin?
Yes. It's a sweet pickle, and it has like clove and cinnamon and candied ginger. So the book even tells you how to make candied ginger. So I did that.
You did? So, I love that. And that's expensive. It teaches you how to candy ginger. Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, what I'm thinking is like, if you fought, like, have you found some easy way to pickle? Like, when I watch Mike make the pickles, like, that just looks really complicated to me. Is it not?
Well, there's some labor involved, for sure. You know, sterilizing your jars and all that. But when it's a snowstorm, you know, Eastern Maine, we get those. If you're trapped inside, you can pickle. A grocery store had asparagus on sale, so I went and bought, like, 6 pounds in order to do that recipe. Just to try it. So when spring comes, with asparagus and tarragon being spring crops, I want to be able to go to the farmer's market and just pick up some from them and pickle those. Yeah, you got to do all the test run before it's time, you know.
That's awesome. These are, you're just dropping tons of golden seeds. And I'm sure some listeners picked up on what I did was, there's something people are going to want to buy at the farmer's market, asparagus and tarragon. And I know that Sarah Harding, when I interviewed her, she asked the farmer's market, you know, what would be something she could sell the other vendors? And they were like, grow asparagus. You can sell every stick of asparagus. So, you know, ask your market, see what they say they need. And, but asparagus are tough to get out. And I'm still thinking of like the kids and I planting in the milk cartons this week. And I gave some kids sage, some kids basil, and some kids rosemary seeds. And those rosemary seeds were itty bitty, teeny tiny, just like the carrot seeds. And you know, all the kids, they put their little pinky in the dirt, and I'll bet those rosemary seeds aren't even going to sprout. We might have to re-put those and see, or we might have to like do an experiment and put some new ones in different cartons and put them close to the top. And see if those ones, you know, because I know the dates that we planted, the ones we've got there, even though they're not marked, but we could date them and then we could do the other. And that is like, so like right in the fourth grade curriculum, it talked about like, you know, making the, planting the different seeds and making a chart of their seed date and germination date. And so I was kind of bummed because we didn't do like in the movie, there's like, or the little computer thing online, it shows you like to compare spinach and radishes and tomatoes and lettuce, and I didn't have those seeds, so we did the herbs. But this will be perfect because it'll be herbs that we planted last week versus herbs that we planted this week and how close to the top of the soil, and we'll see if that makes a difference. So I love this. So
great stuff, right?
Yeah. I'll be quiet, you just keep going, you're on a total roll.
Well, I going back to the asparagus, I'm actually going to finally, because I've been trying to talk myself into it for 3 years, and if I'd done it 3 years ago, I'd be getting good crop this year. It's putting asparagus in, but it does like take 2 or 3 seasons to really mature to, you know, getting it so it's like, you know, the size of one of your fingers thick instead of real spindly.
Well,
but now I've got reason to.
Oh, is that why? Like people say you don't get asparagus for 3 years because in the beginning it's not even like, it's just like a stem that kind of grows up instead of something that you can eat.
Yeah, I guess. And I don't know this from experience, just what I read when I was first, you know, looking into it is the first. So you put the seeds in by the end of the year, I guess you might see some growth, but next year they're short and thin. And then you just, I guess they're edible. You could cut them, but the roots stay intact, and then the plant just keeps growing following season. So I guess maybe it has something to do with, you know, the root structure becoming more sound. I don't know, but it's usually a couple of seasons to really get.
Yeah, that's what I had always heard, that you didn't get a crop for like 3 years. But I might have some seeds I can send you because I bought like a giant packet of seeds, and I don't think we're ever going to use all the seeds that I bought, so I'll check with Mike, but I might be able to just mail you some.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, thanks. That would be good. So,
and I'll send you some pickled asparagus.
All right, well, that might be a little harder to ship. I'll just come to Maine and get some out of your pantry one of these days. We'll go to a podcasting something with John Lee Dumas, because you know he's from Maine. I don't know where he goes there a lot because his parents live there and he has like a home office there. So, and he's getting so into gardening, like, you know, cause he's so on the health kick, and like down in Puerto Rico, him and Kate built a garden this year, and he's really, so it'll be interesting. I bet we can figure something out. So is that what you're going to do different next year, is plant the asparagus, or is there something else you had in mind?
No, I'll put the asparagus in. I'll follow my friend Eric's advice about seed depth for my like root vegetables. And, you know, for the carrots and the zucchini, I'll, you know, get seedlings again. And I'll also try some from seeds, just because I have a greenhouse, you know, that I can put seeds in to grow at the school. So, and see which does. You didn't just hope for a better year. But the year before, I had a tomato blight wipe out my tomatoes, but the rest of the garden did great. And people told me, oh, you're going to have to wait 5 years before you put tomatoes in that soil again. And I was like, that sounds like a challenge. So I put tomatoes in again last year, but at the other end of the garden, the tomatoes turned out great. No blight, but the rest of the garden, again, as I said, didn't do so well. But that's all right. You know, it's what you learn.
Yeah.
And my garlic was a great, I had a great garlic crop. that came in last year. I planted like 120 bulbs and I got 115.
Nice. So,
yeah, I put in, I cut back. I only put in like 70 bulbs last fall, but I do expect them to grow because this was actually my first year of using garlic bulbs from the garlic I grew the previous year. Prior to that, I would get it at the farmer's market, but then I saved bulbs. And so this will be my first generation of my garlic, if you will.
Nice. Now, but so if you got, like, you're actually only planting one clove, right? And
right,
then that clove
right.
makes a bulb that's like 8 cloves. So you really like increase, like if you got back 115 bulbs out
oh,
of
yeah.
120 little pieces, right?
Yep.
Cuz you plant
yeah.
each little piece, like you really got a lot, and that's how you're able to plant 70 again and still have some to eat.
Right. Because
right?
I use garlic in a lot of my pickling. So it was worth that's an easy crop to grow, and it was worth it for me to plant that much.
Oh my gosh. Mike grew me garlic this year. And then this woman, he got this job working for this woman in Rexford, and she wanted onions. And Mike is not a fan of garlic and onions. So we've never grown either one of those here before. And so the woman gave him some onions that I took over to school with me. And I cooked with garlic and onions this fall. And like, I totally fell in love with food again, I think, and cooking, and just like, I made so many good things in my crock pot with Mike's potatoes and green beans. And oh my gosh, the food I ate this fall was amazing. Because nice. Garlic was just like, I don't think I can go back to going without it again. So he planted me garlic again this year. And I think we're going to get some onions this spring.
Yeah. I use garlic in almost everything.
I know, and you were the one that told me about the garlic scapes, the tops of the garlic
yes.
plant, and we cooked
yep.
with some of those this spring too. I want to hear about the greenhouse. Like,
yeah,
how's that? Like, what are you doing? Because like, we have this greenhouse, and I just asked the guy who has the keys if I could have access to it, and I really want to take my kids there like once a week at least, and maybe have the tutoring kids go like once a week too, or twice a week, because I'm in a different building this year, so it's not right outside my classroom like it was last year, and we don't have a garden club at the school, and I'm just too overwhelmed to try to get one going, but I
right.
want to I'm not even really sure. And last year we had another guy that did it, that he was like in charge of everything, a food corps member, and they don't have a food corps person this year. So what, like, give me some suggestions. Like, what do you got going? Like, I've been thinking, like, that would be the perfect place to put the compost pile. Like, I've been going crazy at the school with all the food that we throw. All the schools have a fruit and salad bar every single day. And I know there just has to be a ton of produce just going in the garbage. But I've been like, where can we put the compost? Because dogs run wild. And, like, it's got to be somewhere really contained. And all of a sudden, I had this brainstorm this summer. I was like, we should put the compost bin in, build a compost pile right inside the greenhouse. So anyway, what are you doing in your greenhouse?
Okay, so our greenhouse was built in 1986. So
oh,
it's 32
goodness.
Years old. Yeah, it's been, I wasn't around when it was built. But have for the past couple of years gone in and watered plants as the, does our receptionist. But as a greenhouse coordinator, part of the thing you're tasked with is, for that title, is you have to incorporate some sort of student activity at some point throughout the year. So I'll come back to that. But the greenhouses, as you enter into our school through the main doors, it's just off to the left. So it's, you know, like a one-sided greenhouse that gets sun because the other side is our lobby. But we have just like some basic plants in there. Some ivies, some spider plants. We've got a small jade plant. Well, actually, a pretty big jade plant. A couple of hibiscus plants. My friend Eric that I mentioned, him and his wife donated a small ficus tree to us.
Oh, I love ficus trees.
Yeah.
And can you have a ficus tree in Maine? You shouldn't have one outside, could you? Aren't they kind of...
I probably wouldn't survive outside. I'm not sure it could take the winter, but in the greenhouse, it looks great. It fills up so some, you know, open space, very healthy. So it's basically, and it's also used as a teaching space for some one-on-one that teachers do with students. So I maintain that. It's about, I don't know, maybe 25 feet by 12 feet. So it's not humongous, but people love to go in there and sit, and there's a small courtyard outside of it too, where like in the spring, teachers will go through the greenhouse to go outside to the courtyard to read on a nice day or, you know, what have you. We've got grapes that grow outside too, as part of the outside. The outside's not as well taken care of, which I want to kind of address this year. But within the greenhouse, a couple of the things that I'm lining up for the kids is there's a program in Maine called Maine Agriculture in the Classroom. And it's been around since about 2008. It's funded by grants and sponsors. And also there's a Maine Agriculture license plate that you can choose when you get a car. Mm-hmm. And so money from that also helps fund it. And it's basically just what it talks about. It's about teaching agriculture, which is a big business in Maine, to kids and teaching them aspects of it. And what they do every March, the third weekend in March each year, is Maine Agriculture Week. And they do a program called Read Me, M-E, Agriculture, and they have a book that they pick each year, and if your school participates in it, they send one book for every classroom and have volunteers come in to read the book to the classroom and then leave the book for that class.
Aww.
So my friend Eric told me about this. I looked into it. I've got us on the list. So in March 20th, I think, is the date I picked, the Tuesday, is we'll have volunteers come in and read a book called Applesauce Day. And it's about a grandmother who picks apples with her family, and they use the same pot to cook the apples in, you know, that's been passed down to the family through the generations.
I know that book. I love that book. That's awesome.
Oh, nice. And I'm working with my kitchen manager to try to get applesauce so we can have, you know, an applesauce cup for each of the kids too.
Aww.
So we're doing that.
So do all the kids in the school get to come, or just like one class, or like how special kids, or like who gets picked to get to go to that?
No, it's each classroom. Like, so for a special reader, you know, like a guest reader, we'll go into each kindergarten class. So there'll be three readers, one for each kindergarten class. There'll be one reader for each first grade class, one for each second, third, fourth, fifth, and pre-K. Mm-hmm. And then, so we'll have 19, we have 19 classrooms. So we'll get 19 readers in that day, read the book, and then the book is left in the classroom after the reading is over.
Aww. And so, like, the program donated the 19 books. This is so awesome because, like, in school, in our reading program of all places, we're learning about government, and the kids are really struggling to understand the difference between the federal government and the local government and the state government. And so this is, like, a perfect way to explain to them, like, this would be a program that your local government would provide. It's through the state of Maine representatives. The state of Maine would help support this program. And like, I've been thinking, like, I was talking to my librarian the other day about our local, like, how to get more hours at our library. And she's like, well, you have to be on the board, but also it has to be approved by the county commissioners. And like, that's another example, because the school, our school district, is very federally funded. So it's kind of hard to explain, because the schools get so much government money, they kind of dictate everything to us.
Right.
Down to like, what are you teaching at 8 o'clock, and what are you teaching at 8:05, and what are you teaching at 8:20, and what are you doing at 9:15 to, you know, whereas like, you know, I know school is supposed to be locally controlled, but when you're in a district that gets a lot of federal funding, that's the way it goes. So this is great. So I love this. And I'm going to see if we have a program where we could have a book and the kids could get to read it. And applesauce is so good, because my kids love apples. Like, yeah. It's so funny that they say that kids don't eat fruit, our kids love fruit. Like, we get that. We used to get that nutritious snack like almost every day. Now it's like you're lucky if you get it 2 or 3 days a week, if at all. And they clamor for it. It doesn't matter what it is. They all eat everything from kiwis to celery sticks to broccoli to pineapple, you know, whatever the fruit. Apples especially, they fight over. Is there an extra apple or oranges? They love fruit at my school. Yeah. Or afternoon snack, whatever it is, healthy snack.
Apples are a big crop in Maine, too.
They are.
Yep, just as a side note.
Cool. Well, it seems like I remember talking to someone that they were, I hope I've got it right. I'm sure it was Maine and not Massachusetts, but I'm pretty sure they were saying that Maine has a lot of like incentives for new gardeners, and it's a good place for new gardeners, like young millennials out there listening,
oh,
or people
yeah,
that want
yeah,
to start
I had
a farm.
To you about that.
It was you, and it was Maine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, at that time, and I don't know if it's changed, but at that time, 3 years ago, Maine's average age of farmers was in like the 30s, and the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, MOFCA, works with farmers to help them secure loans to start farms, organic, obviously, Maine Organic. And, you know, they can buy a small plot of land here and get a lot of produce out of it, or if they, you know, have animals for meat, you know, they can still have a small farm and, you know, produce cheeses and milks and, you know, some meat products for people. Yeah, so I don't know if that median age has changed or not, but yeah, it's a pretty welcome place. I can't remember the numbers. Over like 800 farms in Maine, I think, was the number I heard last week. So for a population of 1.5 million or so people, quite a few of them farm. Not that it's easy, it's, you know, it's a hard life, but they're obviously passionate enough to do it with that number.
Well, you know, I keep reading the statistics that show a small 1 acre farm or a small farm produces more food per acre than these big, large conventional farms. So that's the way we want to go anyway, you know, in the United States.
Right.
We want to have more farms, more small farms producing quality, healthy, nutrient-dense food on smaller pieces of land than these big, you know, conventional farms that we went to years ago that, you know, I'm sure those people were all thinking, oh, this is the future and this is, you know, the best way to do it and we're going to produce more food. I mean, I'm sure everybody had like a good idea deep down in their heart. I think just as we're learning, that probably wasn't the best thing for the environment or I don't know. Anyway, and I know that I tell the kids because we read like all these stories about organic farming and stuff in school. And so I'm like, see, but I'm like, you have to understand, like, not everybody agrees with me. Like, there was a whole article and like they had to compare what does the conventional farmer think and why is, you know, and they were like supposed to like, and I was like, not everybody agrees with me. Not everybody believes organic's the way to go. I was like, but, you know, their book was definitely leaning on the organic way. And I really like that part. So,
yeah.
Anyway, before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP for Organic Gardener Podcast to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today.
So another thing we're doing, this in conjunction with a couple of other teachers, is this is the first year. It's a pilot program that is co-sponsored by the Audubon Society and in Maine and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, where our elementary school, Asa Adams, was selected to have a pollinator garden built. We were one of three schools in the state to be selected. So we're going to have a pollinator garden built. We're still choosing the site, but it will be on our property, 10 foot by 20 foot. And the flowers that will be in it will be specific to Maine insects and bees. One of the bees, which is on the endangered species list, is called the rusty patch bumblebee. So the Audubon Society is selecting the flowers and those bees are drawn to. This rusty patch bee is on the endangered species list. Hasn't been seen up this far in Maine in years, so it may already have left the state possibly, but and also we're going to focus on butterflies, like monarch butterflies. And one thing I'll incorporate into it is to have some of the kids plant flowers that we'll put in addition to the ones that are provided to us when the garden is built. So that's kind of cool. We're going to have a pollinator garden on the property.
I love that. I love that so much because what I like about it, one of the things I really like is that it's 10 by 20. So it doesn't seem like that's still a lot of space. And I still think your greenhouse is a pretty big greenhouse. I mean, think about it. A greenhouse could be just a small, tiny, like the size of a bathroom. That sounds pretty big to me. But I also like that, it's just a pollinator garden. Like it's not, it doesn't have to be vegetables. Like I always try to tell people that I think flower gardens, if you want to start a garden, but you're not sure where to start and you feel like you kind of had a brown thumb in the past, that those can be better things because if you don't have a lot of time, you don't feel so bad if your vegetables don't get harvested because there's, the flowers, they're there to bloom and they're bringing in the pollinators and the monarch butterflies and maybe saving a bee that hasn't been in that area and bringing back a bee. So, that's so cool.
Colors, lots of colors.
Yeah. And I like what you were talking about before, that teachers will go in there and do some one-on-one time with students, because one of my first guests was this woman from Elizabeth Rexler from, is it Earl's Country Gardens or something? She put like backyard gardens in for people, and she also would build school gardens in New York.
Yep.
And she talked about how soothing it is for kids, and kids like, school is so intense and they really, the standards and the Common Core, not that I don't love parts of the Common Core. I think it's one of the best things that's happened, but I also feel like kids need that peaceful place to be, and gardens can really help kids feel peaceful, and they love the worms and they love smelling things and they love watching things grow, because plants kind of grow like they do, they're young, so they can see it, they can relate to it more. And just I think that's awesome that you have a garden. And I think a lot of my listeners, like, because I have a lot of listeners that are super experienced, or maybe not super experienced, but kind of like on the more experienced side like you, then there are beginning listeners out there. So maybe they're thinking, well, maybe this is something I can do to expand. I can start teaching kids, teaching the next generation, getting some more green future growers going. I can get involved in my school and help support. I mean, like just in the conversation we've had, you've mentioned like 20 or 25 different ways to get involved, whether you just want to donate or you want to like help write a grant. Maybe that's where your expertise comes in. Trust me, there are teachers at a school, there are kitchen workers, there's like, the lady who's in charge of our nutrition program, they have like a special grant writing person because they're trying to get really like gardening into our school, and she started this committee, but nobody could meet during the committee. Like none of us, like we all really want to get involved in the project. There's no way that we could make all our schedules combined. So she's kind of stuck doing all that grant writing piece. Like maybe that's where somebody who already has a lot of gardening going on that's listening to the podcast today is going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to help get a greenhouse or a pollinator garden at my local school. So I'm so glad you reached out to me and we're chatting today. This is awesome.
It's interesting you mentioned that you mentioned the grants, because that Maine Agriculture in the Classroom site offers like $50,000 a year in grants to schools to use for organic themed projects. It's like, and you just have to write your proposal and send it in, and then they pick whoever gets the award. So now, because I'm new to this, I haven't gotten into that far into it yet, but have that information saved in the event we need some help. My budget's $300, so it's not huge, but I can get organic potting soil and worm castings and, you know, seed trays and peat pots and stuff like that. Plenty for that with that amount. And I'm working with a local, a Maine-owned company called Ermine Garden Center. They're going to be the vendor that I use. I just placed an order with them, and I'll pick it up next week. So the grant money is there, too, if I need to apply for something that we may choose to do down the road.
Awesome. And you know who's a great grant writer is Patty Armbruster, who's been on my show before. I should have her come back on. And she taught a class last year at this event we had called the Free the Seeds that was just amazing. And grant writing help with any of those things. Like, it might not actually be right in the garden, but there's lots of opportunities out there for people to help our new green future growers. So what are your plans once you get all this dirt? What are you going to plant with the kids? Are they going to come like plant the seeds or water or see the stuff growing, or like how are the kids going to get involved?
Once a week, I water the flowers, and I usually have a student who's, Mr. Joe, can I water the flowers this week? I have a good relationship with the kids at the school, and they're always interested in helping to do something like that. So I get help watering the flowers each Friday. With the pollinator garden coming in, my thought is, even though most of the flowers are going to be provided, I asked in the meeting if we could just keep a small section. So I'll have kids plant like marigold seeds. It doesn't have to be anything difficult. And we can have those put out in the pollinator garden. And if space issues happen, well, so the kids have a marigold to take home. So it's going to be used for that. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that's not bad, right? That's a pretty good reward.
And it's perfect timing. It'll probably be around Mother's Day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So in talking with our principal, I am trying to figure out how I can get a group, because, like, what if I say, hey, I'm going to do a flower planting after school on such and such a date? Well, like, what if 60 kids show up? Well, we don't have any of our teachers teaching 60 kids at once.
No.
So, you know,
have them fill out an application. Have them fill out.
Well,
like
the idea would be like maybe do one on Tuesday, one group on Thursday, and then the following week do the same thing and break it down into smaller workable groups.
You're like, no, if there's a kid that wants to come, I'm going to make time for that kid, and they're going to get to come. And I don't care. Even if they just raise their hand, I'm going to make sure they get the opportunity.
It's for the kids. What we do is for the kids at the school. So if they want to come in and I can show them how to plant with natural ingredients and water in the sun, hey, yay. Yay us. Yay planet Earth.
Right? Exactly. Well, cool.
And we even have one more thing I'm working with a teacher on is once a month they break kids out into small groups to do different things. Sometimes it's a book read. Sometimes it's a video or something in the gym with the gym teacher. So this teacher's also on this committee for the pollinator garden. We're going to build bee houses.
Oh, cool.
Because not every bee has a hive. Some are independent, and here in Maine, we have leafcutter bees and mason bees. What a great name.
I know. I was like, how am I going to fit this in? Mason bees and Joe the Mason. I'm talking to you.
They lay eggs in trees like that have a hole burrowed out by a bug. You know, they put their seeds in, cover it with mud, and then take off. And then the seeds, you know, they hatch and the bees come out. So we're going to build little bee houses out of like scrap wood, drilling holes into them to allow that seed or egg laying. And like, I'll cut the wood and drill. We're going to have the kids sand the edges to make sure the bees' wings aren't hurt entering and exiting. We decided we'll also let the kids paint them. So if they want to paint their own design on the side, and then we're going to hang these outside in the vicinity of the pollinator garden on some trees we have around the front of our school.
I love all that. When Patty gave that thing last year, she had some sample mason bee things that they built out of the wood, like you're talking about. And then I also, they had like this children's, like kids could go and do like all these little activities going on in the back room there. And the kids were making mason beehives out of, like, they would take like a coffee can and they would roll up newspaper and tubes and like just stuff the coffee can full of tubes. It was so easy, but I never understood that part about why they were doing, like, I'd never heard of a mason bee house before. And like the first ones I saw were Patty's. And then that same day I saw the kids making them. And there were people downstairs that were talking about mason bees. And, but I didn't know it's because in nature they burrow in where like, something has already made a hole in a tree. So how fascinating is that? I'm like, look at the science you're teaching us. So, and I have always wanted to make those, and I have tons of newspaper because Mike and I still have like newspapers left over from when we delivered the paper 3 years ago on our porch. So I'm definitely going to try to do that more and get the kids to each make a mason bee house. And especially, it's funny because we're doing a unit on plants and talking about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the eggs and how they get, like, you know, the whole process anyway. So this will be a good hands-on experiment. My kids love science. They love any kind of hands-on, anything we get to do. Like, and I'll be like, well, what was your favorite part? And they were like, just getting to make it, just getting to do the project. They don't care about the end result as much as just getting to get out of their seats and do something. So cool. Well, those are going to be great.
Yes, it's going to be a busy next few months, but I'm looking forward to it. And then next year I should be able to get a little more organized to bring something back. A few years ago, there was another greenhouse coordinator. It's been a couple of years without one. And she actually had a garden club and went to the local flower show in Bangor, Maine, just 10 minutes away, and had a booth for the Asa Adams greenhouse club. So I don't know if I would get there, but who knows? Maybe.
Yeah. And that's another thing that you were talking about that I never thought of. Like, to me, I'm always thinking like vegetables, we got to harvest, but I never thought about it. You could have like indoor like plants and different things like that in the green. I guess because Mike and our house is so tiny, we have very few plants in the house during any time of year. Like, I have my basil plant. Right. We've got a couple of aloe plants, a spider plant maybe. We don't have a lot of plants, but like my mom does, like so many people do. Like Nola Rhodes talked about indoor succulent. Like, she has a whole greenhouse full of, and she's just my neighbor right up the road, like a mile through the woods to my house, even though I have to drive 16 miles around to get there.
Right.
It infuriates me. My neighbor shut off our main road. But anyway, Yeah,
I probably should have specified. It is a flower greenhouse. Yeah, plant greenhouse versus a vegetable greenhouse. Yeah, ours is.
Well, that all works. And plants are so good for, like, your environment, for the kids, to create oxygen, to help them breathe. So those plants are super important, too. I know I forget about them a lot, but they really are.
And I get to gussy them up for the holidays.
Oh, you do?
You know, like around, yeah, you know, in the fall, I had pumpkin. We have a window that faces into the other hall, not just the main entryway, but on the other connecting side. Two sides connect to the school and two sides are open to the outside. There's a big window and, you know, I get to decorate that up with, you know, the harvest and the fall theme and then, you know, snowmen and, you know, stuff like that for the holiday theme. Aww. Which is kind of fun. I'm definitely not a decorator, so it usually comes out a little gaudy, but it seemed to work, and people were kind and said, oh, that looks nice, but then I watch them walk away kind of struggling. So
I just had an experience like that the other day, too. I know exactly how that feels, but I'll bet it looked better than you thought. I'll bet if you like go back and look at pictures a couple years from now, you'll be like, well, that was pretty cute. And I'm sure the kids appreciate you take the time to do it. And I'll bet listeners are thinking like, I'm thinking like, wow, a greenhouse between two buildings. So you're getting heat from it. Like, it's not something they have to heat separately. Like the greenhouse at the school where I'm at is a completely, you know, it's its own little building and it would probably take a lot to heat. And like, yeah, last year I know that the garden, the food court guy was really frustrated because he had everything growing in there in November. And then, you know, we all left for Christmas break and he came back and everything had just died. And he was really like a food court member because he loved food and loved cooking and was passionate about eating more than he was a food court gardener, and kind of just got thrown into the project, and really like it was his very first gardening experience. But he was, you know, he was up for the challenges and he did some fun things. And you know, he's just a young guy right out of college, so just a kid to me. And I just I know he was definitely frustrated with that. And so I'll bet people are thinking, well, it wouldn't be so hard to stick a little greenhouse off the side of a building here, or off of a classroom there, or, and they're seeing it as more than just a place that's just specifically for growing food and as a place that could be used all year round. Like maybe, or maybe they've been thinking about that, but now they're starting to think of the ways they could broach their principal or broach their PTO committee or parent teacher association or something to kind of get funding, because these different possibilities are spinning in their heads. Because I know they're spinning in my head. And so I'm sure they're spinning in the other listeners' heads, and like they're starting to get vision. I don't know. Mike and I, we were just talking, he was talking about, he just finally figured out how to put a pond in. Like when he first read The Market Gardener, that G. Martin Fortier's book, like the thing that stuck out to him, I remember he wanted to do the most was put a pond up behind the mini farm, because water is still a huge issue for us, even with our new deep well. And so he's like, I don't know, I just figured it out, like something about bringing in dirt. I can't remember, like he's going to dig the hole, but he's also going to bring some dirt in. I don't know. I couldn't visualize what he was saying, but he's been thinking about that ever since I talked to Joyce Pinson, which she was like one of my first interviews too. And I bought that book, and it's like funny how like you'll like mull things over for years and years, and all of a sudden they just come to you, bam. And then you're like, oh, now I can see it. So anyway, I'm off on a lot of tangents this morning.
Well, here's something just real quick I want to tell you, because I think you'll be, it's back to organics, but I have, through some friends at the University of Maine, I met a guy who lives on a horse farm just outside of Orono. And last spring, he let me go out, and there's this enormous compost pile behind the farm, like huge, taller than me. I don't know, 20, 30 feet wide each way. And
it's compost
in front, fresh goes to the back. And he let me, I volunteered, say, hey, how about if I come out and turn compost for you? And he said, I'll pay you in compost. So I would go out like an hour every Sunday morning, spend like an hour turning compost. Like you climb to the top and you turn it forward, you know, push it to the end. And I got paid in compost.
Well, let me tell you, that's some pretty expensive stuff. So I'm sure you were paid better than you probably would be in dollars.
Yeah, it was a nice workout.
Nice.
And I listened to podcasts. You know, I just put the headphones in, put on my muck boots and climb to the top and start turning. You'd think the smell would be awful. It wasn't. There was no smell.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, no smell at all. I mean, you know, it smells like a farm, but not what you would think standing on top of a, you know, 10-foot deep compost pile. So I don't want to use a phrase, but I worked in it and I got paid in it.
I love that though. And how dedicated are you to go out there and do that for your dirt, for to do that on Sunday mornings for an hour every week to get enough dirt? Because that's like what I keep thinking. Mike keeps telling me, he's like, you need to talk to some of those ranch friends of yours over there and see if somebody's got a big old pile of dirt sitting around that you can fill. Because they've got the deep beds built. It's like killing me. There's like 10 of them. They have a whole community garden. It's fenced off really nicely. The dogs can't get in there. I do need a windbreak. which I keep thinking they should plant some fruit trees would make a good windbreak, and maybe some walnut trees, because they talk, we had a PD one night about how walnuts is like, even if they just eat like one or two walnuts a day, or even one or two a week, would help some kids, really adds nutrition to their brains. And could just make such a difference in their lives if we could get some walnuts in their lives. So, and like I said, they love fruit. Like if we get some apple trees growing over there, and kind of, it would kind of create a windbreak that would help keep the dirt. Cause I was thinking, even if I get these ranchers now to donate this dirt, I'm still going to have to figure out how I'm going to keep it in those bins, because, we're on the Rocky Mountain front. And so it's windy. It's weird because it's a warm wind, like in New York. I hate the wind, but in Browning, it just doesn't really bother me as much as it does in New York. It's not that frigid cold. Like it's hard to stand out in it for too long. And there's definitely days where you're going to stay inside, and it keeps me up at night like crazy. But overall, it's not a bad wind for wind, but I'm going to have to figure out how to keep that dirt. But I know for years now I've been trying to figure out how are we going to fill these beds and get some stuff growing in this cute little community garden that's a little further away from the school than I would like it to be, even though, I mean, it's like on the next block. But, you know what our school schedules are like. You know, when you only have 20 minutes, I can't spend 10 of it walking there and 10 of it walking back. We won't have any time being there, even though it's just down the block. So I would like it just a little bit closer to my building, but. Anyway,
well, take a week off, drive out here to Maine. I know somebody who needs some compost turned.
Well, maybe next summer. I'm hoping to come to New York next summer. And I want to go to Podcast Movement down in Philadelphia, which I know is the opposite direction of Maine, but one of these days. So, well, that's awesome. And that's great that you reached out and found that resource. So I'm sure listeners are thinking in their heads, well, where could I do something like that? So what else you got going on? I mean, you have like shared a ton of great information with us already, but like, I don't know.
Well, that's about it. I'm looking through that small batch preserving book for my next venture as far as pickling. And it's like jams in there and chutneys and all kinds of stuff. It's such a great book. What a great gift. Like they put some thought into it, and when they gave it to me, they said, by the way, this is as much for our benefit as it is for yours, because they're definitely recipients of things that I can.
Aww.
But my next big venture is I've got to go through my Johnny's seed catalog and get my order ready, both for me and for the greenhouse.
Cool.
Spring's coming. I heard a rumor.
Oh, I feel it. That's what Mike said to me the other day. He's like, do you know it's spring? And I'm like, it is what did we start? We're day seven into third quarter. And I feel like, testing's going to be here, the spring testing. And then we're going to be on the other side of that and fourth quarter. And like, I'm like, oh my gosh, it is going to go so fast. I've never had a year where I felt like school is going as fast as it is. And so, but I am definitely on top of spring is here, and I'm trying to like brace myself for daylight savings time, because daylight savings time kills me. It just like knocks the wind out of me like you wouldn't believe. And so I'm trying to like get myself psyched up that I'm just gonna embrace it and deal with like the light after school. And no matter how tired I am, I'm just gonna make myself like, I don't know, get some energy in the late afternoon. Cause usually like school gets out and I'm zonked. Now, of course, my school day ends about 6 o'clock at night anyway. So, I don't know, but yeah, spring is coming and, we're super excited. Mike and I have been like, we made that, garden goal journal data keeper for next year. Yep. And so we've been talking a lot about what plans we have for the mini farm and what went really well last year and what things we want to change, and just super excited for this season. So
so that's where I sit.
Well, cool. Well, I'm so glad you reached out to me today and
sharing our anniversary with us.
It was great. It was so good to talk to you again. And keep up the
good
work.
Let's do it again in 3 years.
No, let's do it again next year.
Yes, we can. I can update you, sure.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Joe. You have a great day.
Thank you. Drive safe.
Okay. No, I'm just going to stop. It is Sunday, January 28th, 2018, and I just got off the phone with Joe the Mason. But then after we hung up, I was like, why did I shut off the recorder? Because when we were talking in the post chat, he was telling me about how he got into pickling when he listened to my interview with the Frugal Green Girl, who I've been thinking about. And I was like, you know, that was one of my favorite interviews. And she, if you don't know who she is, she has a YouTube site, The Frugal Green Girl. And she was just this delightful young mother who taught us tons of great tips, dropped tons of golden seeds, just like Joe just did. And he was saying that he's just expanded out. He got his first pickling recipe from her. And this year he was pickling carrots using his grandmother's recipe. And he took some of the pickled carrots to his disc golfing. So he's a golfer. He plays frisbee golf. And he took a, he said that he, his friends, his local disc golf community bought like $250 worth of pickled foods and jams from him this summer. And so it just made me think of like the cottage food interview I just did with Nina Heidenberger. If you haven't heard that, you know, that just seems to be like, I'm getting a lot of feedback from different people about what a great interview that was and how many people are interested. And she just really talked about if you have a small farm or a market farm or just even a backyard garden, you can make some extra money and maybe start a small business by, you know, having other foods. They call them value-added foods. And I dropped the phone. Hold on. You know, and Mike always wants to have, he always says if we have a farmer's market stand, we need to have like a big bucket of pickles there for kids to be able to just reach in and grab a pickle. Excuse me. The one thing about this is that pickles are not actually covered under the cottage food law and have like this whole other process if you're going to get approved to sell pickles. But that being said, you know, I just thought it was interesting that he was learning how to create some extra income from, you know, from growing things. And then he talked about people saying he brought some asparagus to an indoor putting thing that he was doing with his golfing friends and how, you know, they're labor intensive, but people were like, I will totally buy those from you. Let me know when you make some more. And just and then we were just kind of also talking about the greenhouse thing at the end and his bringing in some grad students to talk to his students about maybe to read that book or to visit with the kids in the greenhouse and just explain some things. And people, you know, I was saying that in our school, we have this Graduation Matters program, and I've been trying to connect with college students to do like just a short Skype visit, maybe during lunch on Fridays or, you know, like 3 o'clock, just a very short to kind of encourage them to go to college, because that's a big thing. And just like the different things that you can learn when you go to college. So I know I'm a little off topic here, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening. And I can't believe we're about to break 500,000 downloads. We should be there by spring. I mean, this year, my first year, I, you know, put out over 100 episodes and barely had 100,000 downloads. Then the next year, we got 150,000 downloads. Year two, I didn't put out quite as many episodes. And here, I'm still only breaking, well, Joe's my 220th interview, but I think I'm only posting episode 210. So in the last 2 years, I've only put out 100, just over 100 new episodes, and we're up to 450,000 downloads we broke today. I was looking at the stats. And so just, I think what touches my heart the most is that we're changing the world in a positive way. And in the midst of all the negativity out there, it's just so great to hear, to learn. I know we're all learning. I tell people all the time, my show is a success because I'm learning, you're learning, we're all learning. Everyone's sharing such great content and taking care of our planet at the same time. So happy 2018, everyone. And if you know someone who would listen to this podcast, I would love it if you would share it with a friend, because the one thing I am trying to do, like, I would like to break 10,000 downloads per episode. Like right now, I'm only at 1,500 downloads basically per episode in the first 30 days A lot of episodes have gotten close to 3,000 downloads total over the course of their lifetime. But if I could get to 10,000 downloads per episode in a month, you know, that's where I want to be. And so as I go into year four of the podcast, and I feel like I've become a senior in Podcasters Paradise University, that would really help me out. So when you hear me say, we'd love it if you'd share it with a friend, what that means is I hope if you know somebody who would gain some value from this podcast, maybe somebody who's listening to other shows who hasn't heard of it, or somebody who's new to podcasting, you know, Progressive Radio Network listeners, you know, that should be helping increase my audience if I could ever get some data from them, which I know they're going to be sharing with me soon. So I'm glad all of you are out there. If you wanted to start downloading maybe on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app, that would really help us. So thanks for listening, everyone, and just have a great, happy, green future. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.